The Disrupt Education vlog can be found on YouTube. To hear it in podcast form, search Disrupt Education on any of the following podcast platforms: Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Castbox, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Spotify, or Stitcher. Welcome to this episode of Disrupt Education. Today I have Brian Marth.
How are you, buddy?
Good seeing you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Brian Marth. I grew up on the south side of Chicago from a large family. I'm the youngest of nine. Went through Catholic education all through, you know, grammar school and high school and private school, and then went to University of Illinois, mm-hmm. Champaign for undergrad. And went to the University of Iowa after that for my master's. I can get into a little bit more of that. But mm-hmm. Kind of a Chicago kid all the way through, still in the area. And
so what was that path then, like through like high school? And did you know exactly what you were going to go into and all those types of things?
Yeah, I didn't. I had no idea. I think growing up, I knew I wanted to be in some type of helping profession, but didn't know what that looked like. And mm-hmm. you start asking guidance counselors and like, hey, what are my options? You should major in psychology. What do you do with a degree in psychology, right? Yeah. It's like, it's guaranteed that you have to go on to graduate school if you want to do something in psychology. And I think it was just like, hey, I like working with people. I want to help people. Mm-hmm. So I think that was some of the early advice that I received, and was like, wasn't quite sure what I wanted to get into. So the neighborhood I'm from is a real blue collar. I was from a blue collar family. And so like a lot of, you know, kids I grew up with, or like my older siblings, my father, were kind of in the trades. Right, would go into the trades, and I think I was looking for different opportunities and kind of was looking for that path through education.
Yeah, what was that like? Were you like the first to kind of not go the same route, or were there other, you know,
one of your siblings? Not at all. I mean, it might feel that. I think sometimes in my mind, I think that way, that there was like, oh, this is a great opportunity. You're going away to school, and you're not going into. And I think I've shifted my view of that over the years in terms of. It was an expectation. So I mm-hmm. think if you were to ask me questions about what I do now and not just my own story, I think a lot of people, and I suffered from it myself, is that there's this expectation. If you score well on standardized exams, or you can play the game of school from a very early age, I could play that game. I got high marks on, mm-hmm. you know, when we started getting into A through, you know, I was an AB student pretty much all the way through. And, you know, the standardized exams that you would take, I did pretty well on. So it was an expectation like, well, the next step is you go to high school, and the next step is you go right to a 4-year school and you get your degree and you'll be successful, because that's just assumed. Right.
Right, right.
That's what we do. And I think those expectations still exist for a lot of people, regardless of their standardized scores or their grades. It's this expectation that you need to do that standard path. Mm-hmm. You need to go through the way we go through this game without kind of challenging that or questioning it. So I'm like grateful for the opportunity to sit and talk with you as a friend, because I think a lot of what this is about is questioning that. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of it is saying, well, there's nothing, there's obviously we value education, mm-hmm. but are we questioning it in the right way? Are we questioning individuals when they're assumed that's their only option?
Right.
Are we questioning guidance counselors when they're telling people that's what you should be doing because that's what's expected and that's what's next? And you have to get into these classes so you can get into this institution. And then find out when it's a little late in the game, like after graduation, like what do you do with a psychology degree?
Yeah.
That was me.
So what then do, what, so explain your role a little bit right now, because you're obviously guiding people in different directions, and you're seeing them post-secondary level. What you're doing in the capacity. What is your actual title
So currently I work at Columbia College Chicago. Mm-hmm. I've been there for 18 school years, so it's been a while. I started as an advisor working with first-year students, and have spent the majority of my career as an, in some capacity, an academic advisor or an administrator for advising. The past few years, I've moved into the provost office. I'm currently the assistant provost for academic services. So I oversee advising, tutoring, some persistence efforts, a TRIO support program. And to rewind a little bit, I got there again, what do you do with the degree in psychology? I was like, well, what I really loved was going to college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I loved that experience. I loved meeting people, learning about myself, having the flexibility to kind of figure out electives and things that I wanted to learn about. And but there wasn't real pressure on me in terms of I was going to go into serious debt.
Mm.
It was like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did it, and I did fine at it.
Yeah.
But then I graduated, and you're like, well,
what do you do now?
What do I do now?
Yeah.
Similar to the high school counselor, it's like, well, you study psychology. The same thing happened in college where it's like, well, you know what? If you loved college,
yeah,
why don't you look into going back to college and working at a college? And I think my original intent was to do research from a psychology point of view, from like educational psychology point of view of what happens during the college experience. What's the difference primarily between the female and male experience? I was real interested in gender differences.
Yeah.
That was like, I had this epiphany in junior year of college where I took a course on masculinity and men's issues and was like, everything opened up, eyes opened up to the world, right? And I think that led to going back to school, thinking you're going to do research, and wind up being like, you know what? I think for a minute before I do research, I'm just going to get into helping and learning from college students, which led to academic advising, which led to where I'm at now in terms of working in the provost office, which is kind of overseeing different support services.
So 18 years.
Right.
So it's a long, I've actually been in secondary ed for 18 years, and I've seen a lot of changes. What kind of changes have you seen at the collegiate level? Over those 18 years, what are the biggest things that you've seen, like even, you know, student-wise and even curriculum-wise?
Yeah, I think I've alluded to it a little bit earlier in terms of you see more and more students who challenge those expectations, I think.
Yeah.
And then it's even heartbreaking when you see people who should be challenging it that are not. I think more and more students, if they're going into the four-year or post-high school, you know, secondary education, post-secondary, they're grappling more with the financial decision of, like, what kind of debt will this lead to? And then that takes you back to the whole conversation of the value of college, right? And I think for me, if there was anything that was to change or that we would look at, is having a more honest conversation on what do we value, which is kind of a joke, right?
I mean,
it's a joke in the way of, like, right now this country is... Oh, it's the whole place is divided based on a values conversation of what do you value in terms of who do you vote for? What do you support? What do you value in education? And if to make the assumption, the reason I said it's a joke is because it would be really difficult to get enough people kind of on that same value stream.
Right, right.
Of is it money that you're shooting for? Is it for a kinder society? Is it for an informed public, right? What is that value? Is it for business and individual independent skills? What do you value? And like trying to capture all of that and a university degree is not possible.
Right.
But I think that's what we need to do is at least have that conversation of questioning, how are we assessing the learning?
Mm.
What is the assessment? And what are our values? So like, what are you teaching towards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is that driven by our value system?
Got it.
So this is kind of rewinding. I was thinking a little bit on the drive over. I was like, well, what's Peter going to ask me? I'm thinking about like when my 10-year-old, and I went to my first parent-teacher conference with like the preschool teacher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's set up like a school, but really it's daycare while we go to work.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I sit down and I'm like, all right, I'm thinking they're going to tell me how everything's going with her and how she's... Mm-hmm. And immediately they start rattling off like... the metrics and the rubrics of she knows this many letters and she can count this high.
Yeah.
We're talking about a 3 and a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
And we're already starting to condition to we're worried about that exam instead of rewinding and being like, hey, really, all I was hoping to get out of this conversation is she nice to other kids?
Right.
Are other kids nice to her?
Mm-hmm.
Is she nice to you? Is she respectful when we walk out? Is she panicking? She having a panic attack when we go, you know? And maybe those are my values.
Right.
But I was kind of confident she would learn the full alphabet at some point.
Right, right. There are parents, though, who are very, they want to do...
Totally.
Why is my kid not to T at age 4?
You correct. Know, or, and I threw, I think I threw this preschool teacher, this poor young woman, like I threw her a curveball because... I think she probably had met with several parents earlier who were wondering,
Probably.
Is she on the path, is this student on the path to being an honor student?
Right.
Right? As a four-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so if that's what we value, because it's so competitive that we're worried about that so early in the game.
Right.
Well, think about how that escalates into high school and then post-secondary education, where what we're valuing is the competition. What we're valuing is the one-up.
Yeah.
And
right.
the credential. Well, and you can't fault anybody for that, because from a value, from a financial point of view, you want to be like, all right, we put a lot of money into this. I want to make sure that you're competitive and you can make a living when you're done.
Right.
And then the question is, I don't really care if you're kind to people, you get along with people, they like you or you like them, as long as you're...
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so when, how do we kind of fold those two things together? How do we fold in the competition and understanding that in the context of like social emotional learning?
Mm-hmm.
How do you fold that into concepts of collaboration?
Mm-hmm.
How do you fold that into the idea of communication and
right.
open and humility?
Yeah, being human.
Being human,
yeah.
How does that fall? Where do you see that in the value right now of our education system?
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, institution. So where I'm at with a four-year with a college, the measurements were looked at as retention and graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an advisor and you feel the pressure of retention and graduation, so what does that mean in terms of the interaction you're having on the human level with a student who
yeah.
maybe their best option is a stop-out year?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, I value retention and graduation because if it's the best thing for that individual.
Right.
But I think where individuals and institutions are struggling is figuring out, is it the best thing for every individual at that same expected timeline?
Mm.
Like the same going back to me being like,
right.
well, you don't have to work construction.
Yeah.
Go get your psychology degree
mm-hmm.
and graduate in 4 years and come out without any debt.
Right.
So, you know, you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like now that's the same thing, but the stakes
right.
are much higher. I wasn't going to come out of a public state institution $100,000 in debt.
Right.
I came out with a lot of questions. Like, I had a great time. I learned
yeah.
a lot about myself, but...
But really, now what?
It was going to be a reasonable 10-year payoff on student loans,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not reasonable now.
Right.
You get out of college now and you have $100,000 in debt. If you're making... $35,000 a year in an entry-level job, and,
right.
and you're paying back $700 a month, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, get some roommates, you
right,
know, right?
Right, right.
This might be a curveball for you, but what do you think that high schools could do differently to better prepare students walking into your institution?
No, I think what I've learned in terms of high school students is it's back to... There's a lot of the competition in terms of we value advanced placement credit to the level of like you're basically some students are doing half of their college program while they're in high school.
Mm-hmm.
What can high schools do better about that? Well, I don't want to get rid of that program, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Like that's cost effective and it makes sense. But then the question is, what is the college degree?
Yeah.
If your fellow students are doing half of it while they're in high school or a quarter of it with advanced placement courses,
mm-hmm.
I think what high schools need to do, colleges also need to do as well. And it's that idea of, are you putting them in practical situations
mm-hmm.
where they are learning with one another with some type and with the opportunity to fail? Right? So like there's this opportunity to learn from failure instead of I've been successful and I'm in the National Honor Society. I'm an AP student, right? And then you get invitations to be in the College Honors Program and it just perpetuates itself
mm-hmm.
with have those students failed truly at anything?
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that probably some of the best learning takes place from failing or struggling, right?
Right.
And so what can high schools do differently? I don't know enough about the high school system of do you feel like flipping it back on you?
Right,
do you
yeah.
feel like students feel like they've had an opportunity to fail? And I don't mean in the way of like they got a C.
You're right.
B.
Right.
I mean like, all right, cool. Who cares about the grade?
Right.
What did you take away from learning this that it was like truly challenging?
Right. Right.
And I think the high schools who are doing that really well,
mm-hmm.
the problem then becomes are colleges doing it really well?
Got it.
After that. You know,
yeah.
like you can be like, oh, I went to an unbelievable interactive, you know, collaborative school where they challenged us to look at the world in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And the college might be going right back to the same old rote structure of
right.
a lecture hall.
Sit and
I'm
get,
going to
yeah.
deliver information to you instead of us kind of learning it together.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and that's tough. Getting back to the values conversation of what do we value? You're changing a whole system with that, right? Yeah. Like people who are teaching at the college level were not trained to be teachers.
Mm-hmm.
They were trained to be really good at whatever their discipline is.
Right.
And so that just creates this weird thing of like, well, now be really, really good at teaching, not just really smart at
discipline.
And I think that's probably somewhat true in the high schools, maybe not as much.
So finally, where do you see education in the next 5 years? What do you see changing or staying the same?
Yeah, I think for the college point of view, I think it's the next big bubble. In terms of a financial point of view. I think something's going to have to happen. It's getting to the point of it continues to go up in terms of what it costs to go to school and the number of students who are struggling to afford it and the number of students who are now leaving and the amount of debt they have and the defaulting on loans.
Yeah.
It will be the next to blow. So something's got to give in terms of the financial structure.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's 5 years, but I wouldn't, you know. I think the other thing that's going to happen with colleges is that there's, because of that, the it's going to be difficult for a lot of institutions to keep operating the way they're operating. There's going to be a lot more merging of institutions or closing of institutions, which is really sad, but it's also kind of like it's become such a huge market.
Yeah.
It's not, there's not enough students to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Excellent. Brian.
Good stuff.
Thank you, man.
All right, man.
Appreciate it. Guys, we'll see you next time on Disrupt Education.